How are you guys doing? I'm Martin from Guidance for Life. This is the 21st edition of our live chat here on the internet. We'll just wait for people to come in for a minute. Let me straighten up this camera here. Hopefully we have less of an echo than we had last week because I'm in my other office, my temporary office here in a room that we had just completely restored. A whole new floor, and we fixed up the walls and painted it. So, and there wasn't a lot of things like furniture and stuff in the room, so it was actually quite echoey, or a lot of reverb actually. How are you doing, Bianca? We're just waiting for people to join in here. For those of you watching this after it was live, you can go back and see all of the other videos too, or even download the audio in our member section. That's actually going up soon now. If you're not yet a member of the Guidance for Life support community, please consider becoming a member. I give you the URL here. It's just guidanceforlife.ie/members and read more about the benefits there. There's a lot of different benefits. You get a big discount on everything we do. You get access to our No Dig online course for free and our ebooks as well. So we'll have also the audio files for these questions and answers live sessions up there as well. So you can download them if you want to. Hello, how are you doing? So while we wait for people to join here, I'm just back now, just an hour ago actually, from Loughrea in County Galway in Ireland. And I was there at Charles's place. It was, it's called the Bull on Arc. And I'm actually just making a video. I have to edit the video now too, so and put it out. I might get that done over the weekend, maybe even tomorrow if it's a little bit rainy. So usually when it rains, I try and get some of that computer work done, because there's no point in sitting at the computer when it's not raining out there, I guess. If the weather is nice like now, at the moment it's actually still quite dry and kind of sunny out here, but it's just getting dark. And luckily our summer here has not been too hot, but it's been dry. So that's a great way to be. And I'll actually show you some previews as well of the video that I made. It's actually a full video tour. He also does biodynamics as well. So we are going to edit another separate video just about that. So please let me know if you have any questions in the chat, wherever you're watching this. We had awful trouble with Facebook again today, trying to host this live session. Facebook doesn't seem to be too fond of external streams these days. But nevertheless, I believe we are indeed live over there. If you're watching this from Facebook, please let us know in the comments. And let us know if you have any questions or talking points, anything that you want to talk about. I can talk about whatever things we do. You know, if you've been watching our videos, you can you probably have a fair idea of what to ask about, like no-dig gardening, perennial gardening, plants, any kind of plants, actually, really, and chicken keeping, homesteading, food preserving, growing food, probably winemaking as well. I can talk about that a little bit. Whatever you're interested in. Geez, I'm awful warm in here. I might have to open the window. Sorry, one sec. It'll help. So the Bull on Arc in Loughrea is a market garden, and he has, Charles there has a, it's not Charles Dowding, but he is almost as good as him. He has about an acre and a half under production, and he grows a lot of vegetables for a lot of very reputable restaurants in the area, but also actually, some of his chefs actually come to pick and make up new recipes as well at the premises. So they check what's available, what kind of vegetables they can use, or even garnishes and edible flowers too. He does a lot of those. Now, let me see here. So let me see here. Sean is asking, what do you think about veganic farming by using wood chips and human waste to solve climate change and biodiversity collapse? Well, good question. I've never heard of veganic farming. I'm not entirely sure what that term actually means, but if you're using human waste, that would not be vegan. That, I mean, humans are an animal too. So just a thought, if it means that you're not using manure from, I guess, other animals, well, then it's not particularly vegan, if that's what it means. I'm not sure if that's what it means. I know Charles Dowding uses human waste and composts it well down for 18 months and uses it on his flower beds. So to me, that seems to be a safe option, especially considering the kind of chemicals that are in the food today and what kind of medications people are taking. I wouldn't risk putting it on food plants that are going to be consumed again. So that's just my view. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to combat climate change, and it keeps changing, but at the same time, biodiversity is everything. That's what we promote all the time. I think biodiversity, in fact, is everything. The first thing we do when we start a garden is increase fertility, and then we create habitat. So we actually feed the insects and the local wildlife population, including the birds and other small mammals as well. And especially the insects, though, we bring in the pollinators, and we plant our insectaries to do so. So what that means is, insectaries are simply plants that flower for a very long period of time during the growing season and feed the insects in a reliable way. So that means the insects keep coming back for more food, the nectar and in the flowers. And hopefully we have enough diversity in our flora that we can cover the entire growing season with some kind of flowers for them to snack from or to eat from. Of course, comfrey is another one of those plants, and great mullein. There's a lot of different plants that you can use to bring in the insects, really any kind of flowering plants at all. And trees are great too, like lilac. There's different types of lilac we use, and even the willows early on in the season. The spring, there is very little for the insects to eat. So I would suggest planting things like willow trees, because they actually make a copious amount of nectar well early in the season anyway. So what you can also do is you can provide habitat for the insects, hopefully so they will overwinter in your garden, and that will also help increase fertility and almost completely, or in our case, completely eliminate the need for pesticides or any kind of chemical input at all, even natural chemicals. People often ask us, are we organic growers? And I like to say, we don't even spray what organic growers are allowed to use. So we don't spray anything in the garden, actually. We let the garden handle it itself. And we just simply keep increasing the complexity of our little ecosystem. And we keep increasing our niches in our habitats. So that means creating lots of little microclimates, so that you end up with edges and edges in two, when two ecosystems meet, even between the, say, the ocean and the land. At the beach, there is more diversity than in either of the two habitats separately. Same as a woodland meeting a field. The edge of the woodland is actually very diverse in comparison to either of the other two biomes. So even on a smaller scale, you can make that work in a no-dig garden. You can actually bring your habitats together, just even a hedge and a vegetable garden, or even you can have a pond, for example. A small pond would make a huge difference to any garden. We don't actually have a pond in this garden here, but we do in the other garden. We have two gardens, as a matter of fact, for those of you who haven't seen them yet. And even on the paths, it helps to create meandering paths to end up with more edge. Same as creating or digging up a pond, it's better to make the edge of the pond jaggedy rather than round. If it's perfectly round, it's the minimal edge. Of course, the cheapest way to dig a pond. But, I'm still boiling here. And you can create more edge in the garden, and that creates way more biodiversity. But to overcome the whole climate change issue, I think the number one thing people can do is not buy brand new cars every year, especially electric cars. I think the best thing you can do is buy your food locally or grow it yourself, and that will have the biggest impact on, and a bigger impact than anything else, other than, you know, there's, of course, there's living, there's transport, and there is consuming, like whatever things you consume, like food and drink, I guess, too. So if you can, if you can reduce the amount of food miles that your food has to travel, basically. And of course, there's also that entire warehouse system and entire farming system where they pick the fruits unripe from the trees and then put them into containers, ship them halfway around the world, then into warehouses, then into the supermarket. And after, at that stage, sure, the food is already a week or two old. Even if they do it really quickly, it's still going to take them a few days anyway. So whatever you can grow at home is going to be much better quality, both nutritionally and flavor-wise as well. So you're going to end up, any kind of fresh food at all is going to have a much higher nutritional value, but also reducing the amount of travel that your food has to incur before it gets to you is always an advantage. So if you can support, if you don't grow your own food, I encourage you to do so. We have a little mini series on starting a no-dig garden. You can check our YouTube channel. Actually, let me see if I can dig that up while I'm talking to you. And basically, just go to our YouTube channel or our website and just type the word starting, and you'll get the playlist, how to start a no-dig garden. It's very easy, extremely efficient. It just, things are growing like mad. We have a four-week update and a two-month update as well on that garden. And it's now about 10 weeks old, 10 or 11 weeks old. And it's already forming a canopy. So the garden is full of food that's already grown there, but also plants as well. Hello, Mike. How are you doing? Thanks for joining us again this there lovely, wonderful Thursday evening. I was just in Galway, Mike. I was at a friend's place, the Bull on Arc, and I'm going to edit a video tour of his place. And we have the older tours already from 3 and 4 years ago. And essentially, the place is looking really good. It's producing a lot of food for restaurants, but also there is a huge diversity of various vegetables and edible flowers and fruits as well. So there's a lot of inspiration to be had from Charles. And no, that is not Charles Dowding. It's Charles Carr. And if you want to look up his tours to this evening, even the first one or two, before the next one is ready, the up-to-date one, you can go to our website and just type in the word Bullon. So that's spelled A-U-N. So B-U-L-L-A-U-N. Am I getting that right? I think so. So, yes, I'm still way too warm in here. It has been a warm day. All right. Let me know if you have any other questions. Yes, Willow. I've already been asked about Willow. Willow does produce a lot of pollen in spring. We found that it's actually pretty much one of the first real and reliable forage sources for the bees and the other pollinators. And we see literally hundreds. We hear the buzzing of the bees and the other insects in early spring from our shelter belt. We've already been asked about willow and when it will become available again. So we're going to be putting on our winter selection pre-sale, probably about mid-August. That's when we usually put it on. And it gives people a chance to reserve whatever they want to buy well in advance. And we're gonna ship things out from November onwards. And the reason why that's important is because a lot of the things that we sell during the winter time do sell out. They have been selling out, especially willow cuttings, hybrid poplar cuttings, A lot of different stuff there. There is also all the tuberous vegetables, mashua, okra, yacon, Jerusalem artichoke, they'll all become available as well. So, great. Mike has a question here. Let me just read it out. I always have to do this because I have a tripod in front of me with the webcam right here. Because if I put the webcam on top of the monitor, it'll be too far away. So I have it right here in front of the screen. So curing Jerusalem artichokes after harvesting, would you do the same with Madeira vine? I don't know, because there is no inulin in the Madeira vine, as far as I know, and that's usually a chemical defense that you can reduce by curing. So I think Madeira vine is probably unnecessary, but I wouldn't bother eating the tubers. Now, you can, of course, by all means. There's nothing wrong with that, but you're meant to be very mucilagenic. So am I saying that correctly? Mucilage. They have mucilage in them, same as the leaves. We use it as a leaf crop, and it's also a great crop for food security as well. But we found that it doesn't grow that well outdoors. It definitely grows at least triple the rate indoors as well. We found that you can end up with like a small football size ball of tubers from one tuber. So Madeira vine is a great plant to have if you live somewhere where there is frost. If not, it may become an invasive, so be careful. If you live somewhere like Australia, then that's a problem. But here in Ireland, we are okay. It usually dies back to the ground every year. But you know what? So is the spud. You know, the spud is an invasive too, but you know, it's edible. So that's a good thing, I guess. Sean is saying here, animal agriculture is the main cause of biodiversity loss and water pollution. Absolutely. And you know what else is? I mean, first of all, I'd like to address that point. How are the majority of the livestock in the Western world being managed in CAFOs? So confined animal operations. Something, what's the F? What does the F stand for? I don't know. But what I can tell you is that, of course it's bad. Sure, the cows and whatever animals they're keeping, the pigs, they're standing up to their waist in their own manure. You know, there is no point in keeping animals in a place with no daylight. You need to, if you're going to, you need to respect the animal if you're going to grow the animal for food. And you need to give the animal a species-appropriate habitat, including a species-appropriate diet as well. You cannot be feeding a ruminant like cows or sheep or even any animal, really, for that matter, including poultry or pigs, a 100% grain-based diet. Like, that's the first problem. And the other problem is all the runoff off of these agriculture monocrop cultures, like the grain crops, you know, the top few, as I'm sure you'll know all about, Sean, you have wheat and corn and rice, and what am I missing? Soy and potato after that. So it's a distant fifth. And all these grains are being grown using chemical fertilizers, and then they spray Roundup before and after and during growing these crops. Of course, there's going to be a mad amount of runoff because it's not sustainable. What people need to be doing is eating. They're not. A grain is not a food that's meant to be eaten by any animal by any means, especially by humans or ruminants, for that matter. So yes, animal agriculture is bad if you're talking about CAFO, which is the majority of the meat that's being produced in the Western world anyway. But there are very sustainable ways to grow meat. And I suggest that you look up some of the people that inspired us. So if you go to our website and type in the word inspired, you'll find that list. And one of them is Mark Shepherd with Restoration Agriculture and Animal Impact. And Richard Perkins has also proven this over many years, that animal impact is actually key, and it is a natural phenomenon to cause just the right amount of disturbance in the ecosystem on a pasture, for example, to actually keep that ecosystem not only alive, but keep that ecosystem fertile. And it actually helps it to grow bigger and better and more diverse if they are being managed correctly. Yes, real food is more expensive than chemically derived factory food. Yes, I agree. And we can't even, we've been sometimes, we'd have the odd food from the shop, like say some of the meats, and they're not very good. Even here in Ireland, they appear to be grown in feedlots. So I would not recommend that. And I would recommend that if you are purchasing meat, I would suggest that you do so once a year, if you can afford to do so, and if you have the freezer space available. And please do so from a farmer that treats the animal species appropriate. Anyway, hello, how are you doing? I actually don't know your name. I know in Nerste, how do you say it? I know you're from Germany and you have a campsite, so I do remember that much. So thanks for joining us today. So please let me know if you guys have any questions about small-scale food production, such as gardening or chicken keeping for egg production. Oh, Taryn, okay, that's great. Thank you. No, we were just talking about livestock, and I have no experience. I'm no farmer, and by the way, the very definition of a farmer, I guess, in the traditional sense, would be that at least Mark Shepherd says so. If you don't get into a tractor in the morning and you work all day, and you get out of the tractor in the evening time, you're not a farmer. You're a gardener. So if you're working at a smaller scale, let's say under 2 acres, such as a market garden, for example, like become a professional vegetable grower, which can be a very profitable endeavor. However, it is a 90-hour-a-week job, but it is also seasonal as well, and it's a little bit risky. But at the same time, food is becoming more scarce, and at least according to the news, I haven't seen anything like that locally yet. But hello, Liz, how are you doing? Thanks for joining, and I would highly recommend that you learn how to grow food before you have to, because why not? And actually, it's a lot of fun to learn how to grow your own vegetables and fruits, because then you can grow food that you can't even buy in the shop. Never mind the fact that it actually tastes 100 times better, and it is better for you, so you'll have more energy to enjoy the rest of the day, and you'll probably get less sick as well, or you'll get sick less often, hopefully, touch wood. No, let me see. I am afraid, Mike, I did not investigate the fermentation methods yet. I have had a very, very busy week. I have been processing all of the onion and the allium orders, all of our garlic and onion orders. All the perennials are going out this week and next week. And on top of that, I have had a couple of big orders as well that I need to prepare. And I'm actually also under pressure a little bit. This week, or this month, I should say, August, to propagate as many plants as I can before the season is finishing, because in September it's sort of too late. Because by that time, if you're only starting plants from seed or from cuttings, you will find that the cuttings may not root enough, and the seeds may not, it just may not grow into a strong enough plant to make the first winter. And that's why I'm kind of concentrating on getting more plants started this month. But I'll look into it. I appreciate you asking about it, but preserving food is not on my mind at this time of year just yet. But in September, production or starting plants, or aka production, is basically going to slow down. Now, basically, starting new gardens and setting them up and planting them up will basically be finishing for the year. There's no point in starting plants, as I said. But in September, I usually start doing all of the homesteading stuff, including preserving food, even some of the harvest, actually, as well, that's coming from the garden. I might actually be able to do some of that. By the way, Bianca, I asked Charles for tomatoes. He said he sold out completely. He has been selling out of tomatoes. Wait until you see how many tomatoes he's got in his greenhouse. I think it's a tunnel. I think it's like 30 meters long, and it's like a extra high tunnel with 2 layers of plastic as well for insulation. And you'd have to see the video to believe it. And he actually got himself some new fun stilt shoes where you can actually walk like half a meter taller than you are, to just to pick things high up so you don't have to carry a stepladder with you all the time. All that in the video coming up as soon as I get a chance to edit it. I could do a bit of it tonight, but I've got other things to do yet. And it sounds like it's going to rain tomorrow. At least people have said so, but I'll believe it when I see it. Let me see here. When is the next open day? That'll be the 11th of August. I believe there's one or two more spots left available. I wouldn't really call it an open day necessarily. It's actually a free guided tour of our garden, and you can just take a walk with us around, and I'll explain things, how to do things, the methods I used, and the plants as well. It's free of charge, and if you'd like to come, just go to our events page. I'll give you a link for that here now. There's the link. Gardens4Life/events. Gardens4Life.ie. /events. And take a look there. We also have workshops there as well. If anyone here is local and you're listening to this during the live or after the fact, you can go to our events page at any time and check what kind of workshops we have. Sometimes we have free community events coming up too, but we also host workshops on request as well. And if you'd like to book in your gardening club or community garden to see the garden, please give us an email or send us an email. Give us a shout on contact@gardensforlife.ie. All right. Let me see here. There is a question here. Why is it important to have a garden, and how can I set up a garden in a small area in a short period of time? Well, the quickest way you can set up. So first of all, a small garden can be very productive. It doesn't have to be a big garden. We started lots of little gardens around our house here because it's a farmhouse. There is already mature trees and lots of sheds and outbuildings. So we worked with whatever space we had, and we didn't want to block ourselves in. So we used all the little nooks and crannies, all the little spaces, like maybe even spaces like 5 by 5 meters or 10 by 10 meters. And that can produce an awful lot of food. The best way to get started straight away is smothering the grass. So if you have time, if you have like maybe 6 weeks to a month, you can easily smother a lawn. If it is a lawn that you're looking to do your garden in. One sec. And if you want to get started straight away, really you can put down cardboard and then get mushroom compost. But the trouble is, of course, that mushroom compost needs to be aged first before you can put it down. I'm not sure how would you go about starting straight away, but if you get the mushroom compost and just leave it resting, even for 6 weeks to 2 months, that's long enough, and it'll break down nicely, and then your plants are not going to find it too acidic. So you can put down your cardboard and then your compost layer, usually about 4 inches of compost or 10 centimeters, and that's a lot of compost. I know what you're thinking, but if you're putting it down fresh, you'd probably want to put down 6 inches worth, because it'll actually settle as it breaks down. And you can plant straight into it as soon as that compost has broken down a bit. But if you can keep the compost in a big pile, it'll break down much quicker because the volume is there. That's why Jeff Lawton actually always used to make compost, and he recommends to use, it's actually the more volume of compost you have, the quicker, because the more heat builds up and the quicker a competing bacteria can get killed off by the fermentation process. Actually, it's nitrogen is eating up the carbon, and of course there's bacteria driving that process. I'm no soil biologist though. If you want to find out more, look up people like Elaine Ingham. If you want to look up about compost, Jack Spierko on the Survival Podcast has some really good material on composting. He actually presented some podcasts and some videos. And he has a course too about composting, about I think there's 11 different methods of composting. We don't use any of them because we just import our compost, as in it's just a kind of a, I wouldn't call it a waste product, but it's a byproduct of the mushroom industry in Ireland. And we've been using it for 25 years, and we found it to be extremely good for the local soil life, as the soil life is inhabiting our compost within a matter of about 1 to 2 months, and the worms too. And that's testimony to me that the compost is safe to use for growing food. Now, let me see here. Yeah, so you could start two or so hotbeds to kick off, start a small garden for February and get a head start of spring. You could, but like people often ask me, what time of the year is the best to start an OD garden? Well, I like to say any time of the year at all, because you'll have it forever, unless you move house, I guess. And you can't really bring it with you. What you can do is the growing season is actually a lot less limited than you might think. You can even plant things in the ground, like vegetable seedlings, in as late as September or even October. There wouldn't be much daylight left in it. But I've even planted things in September, like kale or broccoli, and you get quite a crop. You get a good crop before the winter, but then as the plants wake up into January, the end of January into February, those plants will have already established their root systems and it'll produce food for you straight away. Now you might think, sure, that's 6 months away. What is it? Christmas is like 5 months away, so February is 7 months away. Well, you gotta start somewhere, and you can, if you start now, you'll have a garden by September, and you can plant all your stuff into it. And then you'll get a crop even a little bit in advance of Christmas. But if you leave those plants in the ground and you don't pick all of the leaves, you will get a fairly good crop in spring as well. Again, it's gardening, no-dig gardening in particular, it's not a matter of doing it quickly. It's a matter of thinking long-term. Every year you're adding on to it. Every year you're making the garden a little bit bigger, another little bit bigger, and another bit. You're expanding the garden a little bit at a time, and you're, what's the word for it? You're adding diversity of plants, especially perennials that attract beneficial insects, of course. But another thing we do is we also add a little bit of fertility on top as well. We don't have to do that. Like, we might mulch the garden bed or the grow spaces with about an inch of compost per year if we're exporting fertility in the form of vegetables. And if you want to, you could also cover it for the winter. You could tarp it if you don't want any weeds to grow in that space. If you want zero maintenance, almost zero maintenance with that. We don't cover most of our beds, and I think that's probably the reason why some of the old weeds are getting out of hand just a little bit. But I think I just need to spend a little more time weeding throughout the year. Even last year, for the second half of the year anyway, I had an awful hard time because I was in my job and I had the business full-time, family and homestead as well. So there's like kind of like having four full-time jobs, as many of you I'm sure will know. And basically I ended up being mega busy in the job as well, having to do two people's jobs, and it was twice as busy as it is normally. So I did not get most of the weeding done that I wanted to get done. So therefore I'm paying the price now, of course, and I've been actually trying to keep on top of it. Basically, since I quit my job in January, I've actually just been solving all of my problems. And I'm still, that process is still ongoing. I'm sure the list is getting shorter, but the list of projects is only getting longer, at least projects that we'd like to do and we'd like to achieve. So now, Have you got any other questions? I'm quite tired actually at the moment. What I'll do is I'll show you the video. Hang on. Here. Let me see. What I'll do is I'll show you the video just real quick. I'm just going to show you a little bit of, that's Charles here now, Charles Carr from the Bull and Ark. Hang on, I need to turn off the sound here. So I can give you a bit of commentary. Well, that's his garden, you can see. And that is all vegetables. And there's 10 meter rows, like market garden style beds, so that he can actually use the same tools and the cedars and the covers as well. He's got covers for the garden beds, and he's got wood chipped paths in between. So marigolds along the edges for biodiversity and insects. That's the pumpkin patch. Yeah, and I think he planted quite a few pumpkins this year. Hang on. I'm just going to skip through here. Oh, sorry now. Let me just see here. Where is it? So that's one of the tunnels. I wanted to show you the tomatoes, actually. Bear with me. There's the tomatoes in the background. Anyway, what we'll do is we'll show you when the video is done editing, when I'm done editing it. And he has a wealth of knowledge, I tell you. Especially if you're interested in growing tomatoes on a bigger scale or any of the other crops that he's grown, especially a market garden style stuff. Like he does grow a lot of leafy greens. He has mostly salad greens in the polytunnel, especially the insulated polytunnel, and during the winter, that is. And then in spring, he sows the tomatoes. And the funny thing is, he does the tomatoes diagonally so that he doesn't have to grow them the full height. So they're actually like 3 meters long, the tomato plants, but he grows them all diagonally. So I'll show you that. I'll show you more of that, and I might even probably make another video about it, just commenting on his methods after I'm done editing this tour of the Bull and Ark. I think this is, this is year 5 now. So we did a year 1 and 2. Now this is a year 5 tour. So let me see here. So Taryn says, I start my no-dig beds in fall with cardboard, then manure them with brown mulch 15 centimeters thick, or 6 inches, and then plant in spring. But I have a good 4 to 5 years weeding before they are all weed-free. But I get ground elder. Yeah, we have ground elder too. I find that in the first year, I get no weeds at all popping up when I use the cardboard method in particular, or smothering the grasses using plastic, like a black tarp, for example. I don't really like to spend money on plastic and support that whole industry and produce more waste. But if you buy the best quality tarps you can afford, I figured you're okay if they last for a very long time. And because you're the food and all the crops, all the perennials that were grown actually are offsetting that plastic by a mile, even in the first year. But if you're using cardboard, I find there is very few weeds popping up afterwards. And I think maybe you just need to use more weeds. Can I ask you, do the weeds pop up from underneath or do they grow from the top? Like airborne seeds falling on your garden beds, because it could be a bit of both. I don't know. Most of the weeds that grow in our gardens are airborne weed seeds, and weed is kind of a harsh word. I mean, all plants are useful in some way to somebody in the ecosystem. No such thing as a weed, really. It's just that we call them that. as our six-year-old often asked us, why are we pulling that plant? Why is that a weed? Because we have enough of them in the field, I said. So, all right, let me know if you have any other questions real quick, and then we'll leave it at that because I am tired. I got up early this morning and I've been away all day, and I've got a lot of work to do actually out there yet. I'm going to, I'm going to sort through all the plants that I got off Charles. So that's interesting. It's going to be awesome to add those onto our collection of plants here. You can subscribe to our email list, by the way, if you want to get notifications by email a couple of times a week at gardensforlife.ie/subscribe. And if you want to support us, you can become a member of the Gardens for Life support community. And members get a lot of benefits, including a 25% discount on all the things we do. And you get access to the No Dig Gardening course as well for free. It's to the value of €69. And you get access to our ebooks on No Dig Gardening as well. So please give us a thumbs up if you don't mind on the video, and consider becoming a member. It would help us out a lot. If you happen to be on Patreon, for those of you over there, you can also support us there under the name of Birdland Homestead. That is our channel and our Patreon page. Are you sure it wasn't the Galway races you were at? Mike is saying, I didn't even know they were on. I'm not into that type of thing. But thankfully, I didn't have to go near the city. I was only going to Loughrea. So that was great. That would explain all of the traffic, though. Definitely more traffic than usual. Let me see here. All right, folks. Please check out our website if you're interested in any kind of tubers or plants or cuttings. It's just gardensforlife.ie/shop. We'd highly appreciate your support. And thank you very much. See you next week. Bye-bye.